Okay, well, good morning. So we're back in Biblical Solutions for Life Issues. This morning, we're talking about bipolar disorder. And this is a kind of a difficult topic to discuss because there's lots of shades to this to try and understand here. We'll try and break it down into two main sections. It's particularly difficult because if you know someone, I think, who's struggling with these mood changes, it's a difficult thing. It's a very difficult thing. So we will try and break that down from a biblical perspective this morning. However, to understand bipolar, we first have to understand depression. We talked about depression last week, but I wanted to review it this week because I think, as we'll see, there's a correlation between a shade of bipolar and depression. So we want to at least review what depression is. So last week we talked about depression, and we said that most of what the medical community calls depression is a result of normal sadness over a loss. That loss is something important to us, whether a relationship or a goal or a hope or something like that. It can be real or imagined based on truth or lies. And normal sadness has three characteristics. You guys remember what those were? What was the first one? There's a trigger, right? It comes on at a time. There's an event that triggers our sadness, right? A death, a sickness, a lost opportunity, a hope that's not realized, something that's a trigger for the sadness. What's the second one? The duration. The third one, but that's one of them. One of them. The duration. The sadness goes on for approximately the time of the loss or until the loss is adapted to, like in the death of someone close to you. Okay. What was the second one? The intensity, yeah. The loss, the intensity of the sadness is proportional to the loss, right? I wreck my car, I love my car, let's say, and I'm sad about that, but my close friend or a relative passes, and there's an intensity difference with those losses, and so that kind of describes normal sadness and the depression that comes from normal sadness. And according to studies, this accounts for approximately 90% of people identified as depressed. Normal sadness, and the reason we know that is because there's studies, actual medical journal studies of people who are depressed, who take antidepressants or take a placebo, and the resultant is the same. People get better on the placebo, people get better on the antidepressant, and so roughly those people essentially have the same response, and so those people are, that's just normal sadness. That's it's depression based on normal sadness. So the question for us is, how do you respond to losses in your life? How are you responding to losses? Do we respond in a biblical way? Do we respond in an unbiblical way? I mean, that's the kind of where the rubber meets the road, right? We want to be responding to losses in our life in a biblical way, with an understanding of truth and in a way that honors God. Depression, then, is most often a result of an unbiblical response to normal sadness that continues in a cycle of circumstance, unbiblical or poor response, circumstance, poor response, circumstance, poor response, that kind of spirals into depression. It results in a debilitating weakness or weakening mood, feeling or attitude of hopelessness or despair or joylessness, which becomes the person's reason for not handling the important responsibilities of life. So that is essentially depression. The cycle is reversed by the resources we have in Christ choosing to respond biblically in a way that honors God to circumstances that come. And we continue this cycle back out of depression by responding in a way that honors God. And we talked about those last week as well. Most notably, we talked about being obedience-driven versus feeling-driven. Right? And we looked at the example of Cain, God's instruction to Cain in Genesis 4. So the question for us then is, how do you most view yourself? Or better yet, how do those that know you closest view yourself? view you? Are you feeling driven or obedience driven? Do you respond to feelings or do you obey in spite of circumstances and feelings? I think that's a kind of where the rubber meets the road, right? Am I going to be obedient or am I going to be feeling driven? On the aggregate, I think there's probably all of us are feeling driven at some point, right? But we want to be obedience driven, God honoring driven. So that accounts for 90% of what the medical community calls depression. The remaining 10% are suffering from what's called disordered sadness. There's no trigger of a loss, essentially. Okay, there's no trigger for it. There's no context for the sadness. There's no explanation for the intense feelings, and the feelings are prolonged with no apparent end in sight. The medical community, medicine or medical issues with known pathology, and pathology, we'll talk about it a little bit later too. Pathology is, there's an abnormal cell, on the basis of it, an abnormal cell, abnormal something in the body that's causing the disease. That's pathology. There's something you can actually test for. You can do a blood test. You can do a some other kind of test, medical test. You can see if something wrong with the body. There's pathology with it. So pathology or drug-related issues may account for another 5% of those who suffer from disordered sadness. So there's a reason for it. You have cancer. You're taking chemotherapy. Chemotherapy can influence your mood. You have a certain kind of disease, and that can influence your mood. Those kinds of things. The reason for the sad mood, the remaining 5%, is unknown. It's simply unknown. As of yet. Regardless of the cause, whether you're the 90% of normal sadness, 5% with medical issues, or 5% of unknown, we can still find hope in our relationship with Christ. There is still hope found in the resources we have in our relationship with Christ. So the question for us is, do you live with hope regardless of the circumstances? Regardless of what's going on in your life, do you live with hope? Hopefully we can each say yes to that situation, to that question. So, let's look at bipolar today. That's a review of depression. Let's look at bipolar. And just some, first off, we'll start with some history. And much of what I gleaned today was from internet material from two biblical counselors who are, one's a medical doctor and one's a has a PhD in psychology. And both have fairly balanced views, on depression and bipolar. So a lot of what I gleaned today was from that. So remember, the prevailing thought in the medical community is that people struggling with behavior, emotion, or thinking issues are sick. Right? There's something wrong with them. The reason we say they're sick is because it's based on a medical model of struggles. And we talked about that when we talked about ADHD. There's a medical model. If someone, based on the presuppositions that we've often talked about, if there's something wrong with you, then you're sick. There's a sickness you have. Right? It's something that's come upon you. It's not something that that you're yourself causing. It's external to you. Thank you. The problem with this model is that pathology, like we talked about, related to psychological disorders, does not exist. You can't take a blood test and say, yes, there it is. That's why you're depressed. For the normal sadness. Psychological disorders are diagnosed based on observed behavior. So someone is acting a certain way or thinking a certain way, therefore they meet criteria for certain disorders, and then they're labeled with that disorder. ADHD, depression, or bipolar. And there's a very thick book called the DSM that we've talked about that has all of those disorders. In the DSM-5, which is the current version, bipolar disorder has many variations. For our purposes today, we're going to look at bipolar 1 disorder and bipolar 2. And these are the main two groupings, but Within these groupings, there are subgroupings that relate to the frequency and severity of the experiences. But we're going to talk about the two major sections, two major views, or two major diagnoses, bipolar 1 and bipolar 2. The title bipolar is relatively recent, actually. And in the late 1800s, the phrase manic depression was the phrase that was used for bipolar disorder. If you're older, I asked my brother-in-law this last week. He got a master's in psychology many years ago in the early to mid 70s, and what he learned was manic depression. It wasn't bipolar; it was manic depression. The term bipolar really didn't come along until 1980 with the DSM version of 3, and that's. There was some uses of it before, but it really was, that was the diagnosis in about 1980. For our purpose today, we're going to call it bipolar 1 or 2 disorder to be consistent with what the DSM calls it and to be consistent with what the label that people are given. People are going to be given the label of bipolar, and so we'll just use that today to describe it. Unfortunately, if you have a label, those with the label oftentimes don't know what it actually means. Because there's bipolar is a spectrum of behaviors. And so when someone has bipolar, when they say I'm bipolar, they oftentimes they don't know where on that spectrum they really fit. Because bipolar can be extreme behavior and it can be mild mood swings, more mild mood swings. And so people oftentimes don't know what that means. They just know I'm bipolar. In addition, people will say I'm bipolar as opposed to I have bipolar disorder. And there's a big difference between the two, right? One is an adjective to describe me. It's who I am, right? Another is a sickness that I might have. I may be struggling with. And so the adjective here tends to remove hope from the situation. And in the sufferer's mind, release them from responsibility because they're sick. They have a sickness. And so it's releasing them from responsibility in their mind, to what it tends to do. In addition, you know, our society has coined the term bipolar to describe any mood swing noticed in interpersonal interactions, right? You hear this in conversation. Oh, I'm bipolar today. Because I'm having some, you know, I'm a little emotional, I'm a little angry, I'm, you know, so people will coin that, they'll just say that I'm bipolar. Okay. So it's really, there's little understanding of what bipolar really is unless you have experience with it, unless you've studied it, or, you know, you have relatives or family who may have been diagnosed with it. So a question for us related to that idea is, how do you describe yourself? How do you describe yourself? Where does your identity come from? Is it an adjective or a label? Or do you identify yourself based on your relationship with Christ? I'm blank. Or I'm a forgiven sinner because of what Christ has done. There's differences in how we view ourselves. We should be viewing ourselves correctly. So, any questions before we move on to defining? So, this information here I got from several internet sources as well as readings and textbooks. It's interesting that much of it is conflicting. And so, particularly in the when trying to understand the frequency of mood swings, mostly because each person is unique in how they manifest what's going on. So, bipolar 1 is the more severe of the two disorders, and is characterized by extreme mood swings from euphoric highs, which is called mania, that's the manic part of manic depression, and deep lows or depression. And there are often periods of normalcy in between. So they could be the same as what we'll call normal, right? Some of the time, and then they have mania, high highs, and then at some point they'll go way low. You know, they'll have a deep depression. Manic episodes are distinct periods of at least 1 week, and it's 1 week is based on the criteria in the DSM. When a person has an elevated or irritable mood, which can take the form of euphoria, they are high. Not high like drunk high, but they are just high on life. And at some point, they actually believe they're. At some point, they describe themselves as being very creative and being very clear, have clear thoughts at some point during the experience, and then that changes as it continues on. It's characterized by an increased energy, an increase in goal-oriented activities, restlessness, and a significant decrease in the need for sleep. People with bipolar who are manic, will go for an extended period of time with little or no sleep. And you know, most of us, if we go for, you know, we did our all-nighter during school, you know, after a couple of days, we're like, you know, we just crash because we're exhausted. That's not the case here. They just keep going they don't look like they need sleep. They don't act like they need sleep. High euphoric moods, joyful moods, extreme irritability, particularly when you don't agree with their ideas. And they will have grandiose ideas or a symptom or a behavior of manic mania. They have racing thoughts, talking very fast and uninterruptible. You can't get a word in edgewise. Some of us are like that all the time anyway, but in this case it's extreme. They jump from one idea to another or they're easily distracted. They can't concentrate at some point. They're provocative, intrusive. They have aggressive behavior. They're impulsive or they have high-risk behaviors like hypersexuality or excessive money spending. It's almost like all inhibitions are gone. And they high-risk impulsive behavior. The issue there is that with all of these things is that it can bring havoc to a person's life, right, in the aftermath of this. Obviously during it as well, but it destroys relationships, families, all kinds of things afterwards. There can also be psychosis, which is a break with reality, in which grandiose or delusional ideas or hallucinations are experienced. And these behaviors impair the individual's ability to socialize or work. Many with bipolar lose their job. And we'll talk about that a little bit later on. Periods of moderate or mild mania are called hypomania. So if you hear that word, it's like a mild form of mania. There's a spectrum of what this mania is. Okay? Questions on mania? The other part, so it's manic depression. So depression here, we've already talked about this, but these are episodes characterized by sad or empty mood, feelings of hopelessness or pessimism, feelings of guilt, worthlessness, or helplessness, a loss of interest or pleasure in activities once enjoyed, decreased energy, difficulty concentrating, remembering, and making decisions, either sleeping too much or inability to sleep, thoughts of death or suicide. Psychosis can also be a part of the depression in which delusions or hallucinations are experienced. The next sentence there should actually be a new paragraph, and I'll fix that in the notes later on. But there's a high risk of inadvertent self-injury with people who are manic because of the high-risk behaviors, and then also a high risk of suicide for those who are in the depression or bipolar. The onset of manic or depressive episodes is often foreshadowed by sleep disturbances. Many, as they experience this, can track the onset of these episodes by keeping track of what symptoms they have before they occur. Mood changes, psychomotor agitation, which is movements that are out of touch with the norm. A lot of times, people here will chew on their lip or to the point where they'll be bleeding, those kinds of things. Appetite changes and increase in activity can also occur up to 3 weeks before a manic episode. So before mania onsets, there's actually some hints that for bipolar. Manic episodes usually begin abruptly, can last several weeks to months, and depressive episodes last a few weeks to months as well. Over a 10-year period, and this is where the literature is spread broad, because it's such a, I mean, it's a range, right? And each individual experiences it differently. But over a 10-year period, the average person living with bipolar disorder will have about 4 mood episodes. So it's not like, that's the average, right? It's not like someone with bipolar 1 is constantly swinging between the extremes. There are other aspects of it where that does happen, but for the most part, it's extremes with periods of normalcy in between. So over a 10-year period, you'll experience so many of these moods. Remember, we've already talked about this, but it's important to note that those people who are suffering from psychosis, after a physiological or medicinal causes are ruled out, are most likely suffering from a true mental illness where pathology exists but for which medicine does not yet have the ability to detect. Hodges, who we've talked about a lot, his work as a medical doctor and biblical counselor, said notes that if a person has 2 or more episodes of mania, it is likely to be in their best interest to continue the best and most tolerable medication that controls their symptoms. And he actually thinks that for bipolar 1, like schizophrenia, it is an actual disease of the brain. There's a pathology associated with it that we just can't find yet because of what's happening. And so he notes that for people with bipolar 1, which is the extreme of the two bipolars, medicine is usually indicated, along with the hope that we have in a relationship with Christ. When someone is not manic, not depression, they have the same issues with life that we all have. That care can be brought to those people, just like care can be brought to all of us, by mature believers who understand the word and are able to care for us. And so this is not the only issue that someone like this may have, just like we all have many issues we're dealing with. Okay, any questions on that one? Bipolar 1? Yeah, it's a good question. For a lot of the things that we, things like normal sadness, right? If there was a physiological cause, then you would be able to antidepressants would be the only cure for it. Drugs would have to be indicated, right? But in this, like for depression, you have antidepressants or placebo work the same. Right? There's other psychological disorders where they've actually taken brain scans, and the brain scans are abnormal for people. And with talk therapy, just talking through their issues, the brain scans become normal. Which means the thoughts and feelings we have are causing the brain to respond to them. In this case, normally what you'll find is if there's psychosis involved, a break with reality, those are things where there's something actually wrong going on in the brain. And that's the case with severe bipolar 1 and schizophrenia. Even though we can't, with schizophrenia, they can actually see marked reductions in brain, certain sizes in certain parts of the brain. The theory is that it's an immunodeficiency disease, some sort of disease like that. And observations, yeah. So there, if you look at that, you can find the DSM online. You can actually Google it and find it. and look at the diagnostic criteria for bipolar or depression or anything, ADHD. And so it's based on either the patient, a loved one, someone they know, or the doctor observing that behavior and then fitting it into the criteria.
And it has to be two episodes, so one episode doesn't define.
I'd have to go back and look at it. I don't remember. Great questions. Anyone else? Okay. The next one is bipolar 2 disorder, and it has similar type features of the mood swings, but they do not reach the high highs and the low lows of bipolar 1. And it's kind of unfortunate in my mind, and I think when you read some people who have balanced views on this, it's kind of unfortunate that the two experiences have similar names, since the extremes of bipolar 1 make it unique. In fact, it was, like I said, it wasn't until 1980 when there was this other characterization of it. Manic depression really kind of describes exactly what's going on. Many patients are initially diagnosed and treated as having major depression. When I say major depression, that kind of should be in quotes, because that's the major depressive disorder is what the DSM calls depression. And many people with bipolar 2 have actually have a diagnosis of major depression, and they're being treated for major depression. And during the treatment for major depression, they experience a hypomanic or a mild mania, and then they're diagnosed as bipolar. So I think in the reading, in the literature, this can be a key for those who are diagnosed with bipolar 2 disorder, since bipolar 2 behavior and subsequent diagnosis can result in the treatment for, can be a result of the treatment of depression. So if you're diagnosed with depression and given medicine, but the reason you're depressed is due to normal sadness, not a physiological issue, and you take an antidepressant, the resultant of that can be an overcompensation to a high. And now you've exhibited the symptoms of bipolar, because you've had a low, you've had a high, and now they'll be treating you as, diagnosing you as bipolar and be treating you as bipolar, when really you're experiencing normal sadness that has spiraled into a depression, and now you're being overcompensated.
So is bipolar 2, you're not as severe as bipolar 1?
Not nearly.
So we're calling it bipolar 2?
Right. You still have the mood swings. You still have, you have a high, you have a low, but it's not nearly the extremes that bipolar 1.
That's a pretty fuzzy.
And obviously no psychosis.
It's a pretty fuzzy thing.
Yeah, I think those who are familiar with, who are in the medical community, I think are probably a little more clear on the difference between the two. But in the literature, it becomes a little fuzzy. And like I said, I'm not a medical doctor, so I'm just trying to assimilate the information. Understand.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The comment is she's actually observed bipolar 1. And it's extreme behavior. It's extreme behavior. Things like having the idea of buying all of New York City and thinking that it's actually possible to do that, right? And going out and trying to convince people to invest with you in this great idea to make money. Right? And when people try and counteract that, you are very aggressive and angry about it, because how dare they not agree with your great idea? I mean, it's that kind of grandiosity that's seen with bipolar. Any questions, comments? Great questions, comments, thank you. Okay, so that's bipolar 1 and 2. So the question then is, who or what is culpable? We talked about this when we talked about ADHD, but I wanted to touch on it again. So, once again, we're brought to the question, right? If there can be physiological influences to behavior, emotions, or thinking, then are people responsible for the sin they commit? Are they still responsible? The answer to this really lies. The answer to this question lies in the question: what is the source of a person's sin? And that's really where does sin come from? And sin comes from the heart. You see that in Mark 7. And he was saying, that which proceeds out of the man, that is what defiles the man. For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed the evil thoughts, fornications, thefts, murders, adulteries, and so on. All these evil things proceed from within and defile the man. Sin is in the heart. Sin is in the heart. We are corrupted by sin. We are totally depraved. Everything about us is corrupt because of sin. A wicked heart. We do not seek God. We are separated from God. We are slave to sin. All these things that are listed there. It is sin. Now remember our axiom here. We never call anything a disease that the Bible calls sin. If the Bible calls something a sin, then we're not going to put a label of a disease on it. Having a physiological condition that influences or tempts a person to sin does not absolve one of the responsibility of the sin, since the sin comes from one's own heart. The bipolar experience does not negate personal responsibility. There might be a greater risk of making bad choices, but it doesn't decide if we will actually make those choices. The bipolar experience does not negate personal responsibility for sin. But understanding the bipolar experience does highlight particular struggles and contributing influences that a person may have. We'll give a couple examples of that. But questions for us, what do you blame for your sin? I want to make it kind of personal. Who do you blame? You got wives pointing at their husband. like two people did, two families did. The woman you gave me. So we blame God. So. Also, what list of things that you have in your life that you are tempted to blame for your sin? You have the list of things, right? I'm just having a bad day. You have this list of things that you pick and choose from to blame for your sin. Hopefully we're not doing that. Here's a couple examples. So a man responds in anger. This resembles me, actually. If a man responds in anger to his wife, the anger is sin and must be dealt with. We all agree with that? If we understand that he was doing physically demanding work over a long period of time and his blood sugar had bottomed out, that's the cause for my sin, right? No. Then we see a contributing influence in addition to the sin nature. It does not negate at all his responsibility for his sin, but it does point to additional areas that need to be taken into account when addressing the sin in his own life and when others are ministering to him. Does that make sense? Snacks. Snacks. How about this one? Billy hits Johnny. The behavior is wrong, right? But if Billy had been previously bullied several times by Johnny, that would be taken into account as an additional influence. We would address the biblical response to the stressor of being bullied as well as the pugnaciousness with Billy as he is nurtured and admonished. There's other areas that need to be addressed as well as the actual sin that was occurring. The person who struggles with mood swings should become more alert to the particular temptations and more equipped to do battle and live in dependence on Christ in the midst of the behavior fluctuations. If we know something's going to be difficult for us, we should understand what that is and take steps to address it. We see in Hebrews 5:14, "But solid food is the mature who, because of practice, have their senses trained to discern good and evil." There's a training that occurs, right? That we need to come to understand the difference between good and evil. We also see in 1 Peter, one of our sermons recently, "But I urge you as alien strangers Beloved, I urge you as aliens and strangers to abstain from fleshly lusts, which wage war against the soul. We are in a war. It's a battle. Something we need to take serious. Questions for us is, what influences towards sin do you see in your life? Do you have a plan in place to glorify God when those influences come? Is that something that you're taking active steps to address? So, any questions or comments before we move on to bringing care? Yes?
Has there been any kind of research, background, regards to somebody who's had this and has been involved in, small Christian church and fellowships, about seeing what kind of results have happened because of that?
There's several cases in some Christian literature that I read of people with bipolar 1 who because we believe that there's something actually going on, right? The extreme swings with psychosis, who on medication with loving care and accountability were able to fulfill their responsibilities in their family and in their work life and those kinds of things. There's also cases where and as far as I know, these were Christian men and women. Okay, good question. So it's important to note that those dear souls experiencing bipolar 1 mania and depression may require medication to moderate their behavior. We've talked about that. They should really be under medical care, as well as the care of loving brothers and sisters. In the midst of medical care, there's hope. There's also hope found. There is hope found in a growing relationship with Christ. Progressive sanctification is useful for all of us, regardless of the medical issues we may be undergoing. There's also life wisdom that can help those struggling with mood swings. Exercise regularly, eat a healthy diet, avoiding caffeine, alcohol, and nicotine. Those are stimulants or depressants. Maintain a consistent schedule, using time wisely and sleeping regularly and sufficiently. And learn how to deal with stress biblically. All of those can be stressors for people who deal with mood swings. Can be helpful. In addition, practical prevention like listing out the personal early warning signs of mood swings and seeking help when an impending mania or depression is observed, those are useful. And safeguards can be put in place like accountability, protection of finances, etc. There's in the literature, one of the examples was a Christian man who was diagnosed with bipolar 1, and he was, because you can tell the early warning signs of it coming on, he went to his Christian doctor and believed that he could deal with it without the medication. And the doctor thought about it and then asked him, who will care for your family when you lose your job? And this man had a wife and several small children. And he said, no one. So he took his medicine.
Be clear, I'm not saying don't take the medication, this, that, and the other. But this begs the question, 50 years ago, are we saying these people have no hope? Because they have to have the medication.
Well, mania has been, we'll call it 150 years.
Yeah.
I think in the manic episodes, because it's a brain disorder for bipolar 1, that during those times, the kind of hope was someone keeping you out of trouble. So institutionalizing, most likely. Yeah. I mean, prostate cancer 150 years ago.
But I'm still responsible for my sin.
Yeah.
And I'm a Christian.
The mania doesn't cause you to sin. It heightens your influence to do so. Because as a believer, we don't have to. Those with psychosis, you know, we'll talk about this in a few minutes, about the difference between someone who comes through a medical issue and has done something, right, that is sin, who desires to glorify God, and the difference between someone who doesn't desire to glorify God. We'll talk about that in a few minutes.
Part of the problem beyond not being a believer, I believe, is that he didn't take his medication, and he blamed all his problems on being taking a Ritalin when he was a child. You know, a lot of people.
Yeah.
But he just wouldn't take his medication, and at one point he just ended up taking his life.
Yeah. I mean, the outcomes of some of these diseases are drastic, in not only in the impact on those around you, but then in their own life.
And what his mania part was, he was brilliant. Like, he had a book that they had in Congress. You know, he would have this extreme clarity, like you're talking about. And it's almost like your brain is controlled, is
supercharged. Let's talk about some biblical principles to help those struggling with mood swings in general. Right? And we talked about this a lot, but number one is purpose to glorify God. So as a believer, our highest purpose is to glorify God. It's God's glory. This must be our greatest desire, our highest purpose, more important than anything else. And then we've got several passages there that talk about that. A person who has God's glory as their highest purpose will still on occasion, what? We're still going to sin. We will choose to sin. See that from Romans 7 with Paul, right? However, the results when they come to recognize their sin will be much different than those whose highest purpose is their self. If your highest purpose is God's glory, you will be like David in Psalm 51. Be gracious to me, O God, according to your loving kindness, according to the greatness of your compassion, blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin, for I know my transgressions, and my sin is ever before me. Against you, you only have I sinned, and done what is evil in your sight, so that you are justified when you speak and blameless when you judge. And then in 17, the sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise. That is the difference between the two. When I sin and I recognize my sin, that is the response. Someone whose highest purpose is to glorify God. When I sin and recognize my sin and don't care, right, or blame it on someone or something else, then my highest purpose is not God's glory. So what is your highest purpose? What is your heart attitude when you do not fulfill the believer's highest purpose? Hopefully it's that, a broken and contrite spirit. Second one is walk in the Spirit. We've talked about this a lot, right? Walk in the Spirit, and you will not carry out the desire of the flesh. Third is be actively involved in a local body. We talked about that several times ago. Are you actively involved in a body both to give care and to receive care? That means you have to be involved with people. You should have to have relationships, right, for that to be occurring. For battling mania, if you actually, you know, look in your Bible, you know, kind of a silly exercise, but if you try in your concordance try and find bipolar or mania, you're not going to find it, right, obviously. And because of that, we may be tempted to think, well, you know, the Bible doesn't talk about that. It's not, those words aren't in the Bible doesn't talk about it. Obviously, we know different than that. In order to understand mania biblically, we have to reduce it to descriptive terms by asking questions like, what does it look like? What does it do? How does it think? What does it feel like? When we do that, there's a list of things here. Elated mood, irritable mood, anger, goal-oriented activities, racing and practical thoughts, absolute certainty in ideas, grandiose ideas, impulsive behavior, reckless behavior. And actually, the DSM can be very helpful with this, because the DSM lays out what those behaviors are for people who have been diagnosed with a label. And it can help explain what, you know, describe the behavior that they're actually exhibiting.
How many of those do you have before you're labeled?
The diagnostic criteria are actually in the DSM. It tells you how many, how much, how often. It tells you that. I don't have that with, I don't have the DSM with me right now, but it does, it tells you that. What other labels might you break down to biblical language? We talked about one last week, right? Depressed. What else? Okay, I'm thinking of like a label that you might have that doesn't describe the behavior, but it's a label that people associate themselves with.
Out of control.
Well, that's a biblical issue, right? Being in control. How about ADHD?
Oppositional defiance disorder.
It's a real thing, actually. Yeah. Every 2-year-old and every teenager has them. Actually, the descriptive criteria are different than that, but because we kind of joke about it. But that's, right? We break those down into biblical language, and then we can address the behavior from what the scripture says. And so we have these kinds of behaviors here. So based on specific thoughts and behaviors, we can look at sins to put off or righteousness to put on, as we've talked about that put on, put off dynamic from Ephesians 4. And these are the very thing the Bible addresses very clearly. It may not say bipolar or manic in the Bible, but it certainly addresses the behavior and thinking of manic and depression, mania and depression. And here, in this case, mania. Some areas maybe put off pride, put on humility, put off recklessness, put on self-control, put off anger, put on gentleness, put off rebellion, put on humble obedience, put off selfishness, put on dying to self and service, put off coveting, put on contentment, put off lust, put on purity, put off sinful speech, put on God-honoring words, put off relationship strife, put on peace, put off stubbornness, put on submission. We can lay that out clearly from what the scripture says and address those at the time it's occurring, but also at the time when there's periods of normalcy as well. So we can address them when there's fluctuating mood, but also while moods are stable. Progressive sanctification during stable moods will help when the temptation challenges of mood swings come on a person. Kind of a question for us is, do you view the small changes of life as training for the big ones? The small struggles of life as training for the big one. You think of Israel, right? When God brought them out of Egypt. And as they were coming up to the promised land, they had lots of opportunities, right? Will I trust and obey? Will I be faithful and obey? Or will I disobey? And when they came to those crossroads with little things, they failed, right? They failed, and they failed, and they failed. They get to go up to the edge of the promised land for the big one, and what do? They fail. We need to view the small struggles of life as training for the big ones, moving us forward in sanctification. Okay. The rest of the study was essentially a recap from last week, looking at battling depression. I don't want to go into that because I want to spend a little bit of time on the real life scenarios. But any questions on what we've covered thus far? Okay, let's go ahead. Let's talk about those scenarios then.